Welcome everybody. I'd like to formally welcome you all to the members of the gallery and press, not press, oh yes, hello Olivia, to our meeting tonight. My name is Councillor Rose Hodge and I'm the Mayor of the Surf Coast Shire. I'd firstly like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where we meet today and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and also acknowledge the citizens of the Surf Coast Shire. Secondly, I'd like to inform you that the chamber is fitted with a hearing loop, which transmits directly to hearing aids. We hope that this assists those in the gallery who may have hearing difficulties. I'd now like to call on Councillor Duke to say the pledge.
As councillors, we carry out our responsibilities with diligence and integrity and make fair decisions of lasting value for the wellbeing of our community and environment.
Thank you. No apologies this afternoon. Moving on to confirmation of minutes. Do I have a mover of the minutes from the 28th of May meeting 2019? Thank you. Thank God. Councillor Goldsworthy and Smith. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Any leave of absence requests? No. Any conflicts of interest?
Madam Mayor, I have a conflict of interest on item 5.2, which is the Great Ocean Road Regional Tourism, as an independent director of that board.
Okay, and you'll leave the room for that, thank you. Before we go into question time, we do have two presentations tonight, and I'd now like to call on Councillor Margot Smith making a statement regarding the Queen's Birthday Awards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to firstly congratulate all those within the region that were acknowledged in the Queen's Birthday Award, but I want to make a particular acknowledgement here tonight for the CEO of the Geelong Regional Library Corporation, Paddy Manolis. And Paddy was awarded the Order of Australia Medal for her services to libraries and information services. It's very pleasing to see Paddy's work recognised so widely. She makes a significant contribution to the library services in our region. We are one of the largest library corporations within the state, and we're regularly rated number one and with a 95% satisfaction level. Paddy is also involved with Public Libraries Victoria and the many campaigns that they have related to improving public funding of libraries and also development of programs to improve literacy and lifelong learning. She's also been part of professional development, global professional development programs, selected to participate in the program funded for library professionals by Bill and Melinda Gates, which I think is a significant honour. So I think Paddy is a leader in our community that is really worthy of recognition. She's a quiet achiever and works with lots of very different people to improve lives and to always willing to share her knowledge and to learn.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. I'd now like to call on Councillor Duke, who would like to acknowledge the passing of James Moran.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, I'd like to acknowledge the passing of James Moran. James was a friend of mine, a colleague, work colleague. I worked with James for the last 6 years, but I've known James for over 30 years. James was a founding member of the Surf Coast Barwon Health Centre down here in Bell Street and was the optometrist down here for many years. James came into Torquay because he wanted to bring the service to Torquay. So he brought it into the people of Torquay rather than having them to go to Geelong. That was when the road was a single road heading down to Geelong. And he said, I'm going to come down there. It was only one day a week that he come down to see them. But James had a lot of other little interests too. He loved his tennis. He lived in the Surf Coast for a long time. He played tennis down here. He played with the Geelong Lawn Tennis Association. He was a big snooker player and biggest player with Geelong Club. He was a very special man, a very good friend. James was at work 10 weeks ago and he didn't feel 100%. James ended up in hospital that weekend with a very large tumour on his brain. And they took the tumour out and they said, oh, well, I think can give you 6 months. And they came back 2 weeks later and said, we can't give you 6 months, sorry. So James really made an effort to fight on to the end, but he didn't manage to do it. James had a few really good loves in his life, and that was his two daughters, Felicity and Alice, who made a big part of his life. He shared them on the weekends. They would come round and do things. He would talk about his weekends, what he did. But other things about James was his humour. One of his last things he said, "I've got a tumour, but I haven't lost my humour." And he was still doing those sort of things right to the end. He said, "There's two lumps in this head. One's growing and one's getting smaller." And he was finishing up these comments at the end. James slipped away a couple of weeks ago. James would have been 65 on this Thursday. So pretty young, but a very special man, a very good friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chick. We'll now move into public question time, and this runs for 30 minutes prior to consideration of the formal agenda of Council. We will consider questions in the following order. Firstly, questions with notice that the Council received before 10 a.m. today, and if time permits, questions without notice. If we are unable to answer the questions, we will. We'll try to, and if we are not, we'll be answered tonight. A written response will be provided within 5 working days. And if anyone from the gallery has filled in a public question time form, please give it to Anne Howard, the General Manager. But note, this isn't an opportunity for debate, and 2 questions can be asked per person, and the officers may answer some of the questions. So to call on, firstly, could I call on David Cheatley? No, not here. Okay, I'll move on to Ross Parker. Ross, are you here? Welcome, Ross. Come. Welcome, Ross. Take a seat. I hope the mic's on.
Find out. Hello, can you hear me? Yep. Yes, I live in Wensleydale, and we're here in response with a couple of other people who will be asking questions in regards to the proposed development.
I'm sorry, Ross. Can someone... We can't hear you. I don't know. Is it on? Is it on?
Yeah. A bit closer.
Green light? Okay. Maybe move it a bit closer.
Yeah. Closer? Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Ross. Right. Sorry about that.
So I'm a Wensleydale resident, and here in... asking about the proposed development at 105 Gunflats Road, Wensleydale. So basically my question's a bit more general than a couple of others that are going to be asking. So it's in relation to the proposed licensed restaurant and accommodation, and just wanting to inquire as to what the consultative process will be for those that have expressed their concerns about the development. And those concerns are about the unsuitable road conditions, the potential noise aspect, potential contamination from, you know, runoff, possible runoff from the rear of the property into the tributary of the Anglesey River, and bushfire management issues, in regards to the safety of the residents and patrons of the facility. So I'm not sure if everyone's aware of the...
Yeah, we haven't had a briefing on it yet, but I'll get our General Manager of Planning, Mr Rance, to answer your questions.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Council's Planning Department are currently assessing a permit application and are waiting for additional information from the permit applicant. That's probably why there's a bit of a pause in the assessment. In assessing the application, Council's planners will consider a range of issues, and they do include the things that you've mentioned, like bushfire, noise, amenity impacts and environmental impacts. And a number of submissions have been lodged in relation to this application, and the Planning Department will advise of the next step in the process once the additional information has been received. But it's worth noting that generally the further steps do involve a planning consultation meeting where submitters' issues can be discussed with the applicant.
Ross, did you have a second question?
Well, it was only in regards
to that one.
So the second question is basically, which I'm sure will come out from the discussions you're talking about, but the proposed operation time for the facility is from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. two days a week, and shorter times for another 2 days. But it doesn't actually state in that how many sittings they're proposed. So it's for 50 guests each sitting, and so our concern obviously is if that's four or five sittings, that's a significant increase in traffic into our area.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Through you once again, Madam Mayor. The assessment of the application does include a traffic flow onto adjoining roads assessment, and it does get referred to our infrastructure area for that assessment.
Okay.
Thank you, Ross, for your two questions. Thank you. I'd now like to call on Danielle Renfrew. Welcome, Danielle.
Hi.
come close to the microphone.
We might be repeating ourselves.
That's all right. That's okay.
So I live directly next to the proposed venue, so I can see it from my house. My biggest concern, as the proposed operation times are from Thursday through to Sunday, and all homeowners are legally entitled to their quiet enjoyment, can council guarantee that the noise and lighting generated from the proposed licence venue will not impact local residents whatsoever, particularly us at 135 Gunflats Road?
Thank you. Mr. Sullen again.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, as you understand, there's no absolute guarantees of anything, but an important part of the assessment of the planning permit will be to look at the impacts on the amenity of the surrounding properties. A central part of the assessment of any planning decision is whether, on balance, an acceptable outcome can be achieved. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, okay. And so if it does go ahead, my second question is, if there is an issue, how does council plan to police it?
Yep. So if a planning permit is issued, there is an obligation for the use to operate in accordance with permit conditions. So they'll issue a permit, might have 10, 15, 20 conditions or whatever. And if neighbours have concerns about non-compliance with those conditions, they get raised with council's planning compliance team, who go out, they'll conduct an investigation into any issues that are raised.
Okay.
Thank you, Danielle. Thank you very much for coming in. And Kevin McCormack. Welcome, Kevin.
Continuing on the same theme, my question is based on the Shire's Road Safety Strategy to 2021 policy. In relation to the same proposed development, the site is accessed by a single-lane, largely sealed road of 7 kilometres from the north, that's Wensleydale Station Road, or a 12-kilometre unsealed road from the southeast, and that's Gunflats Road. Given the current state and standard of both of these access roads, and the potential for more frequent and greater volume traffic from the proposed business, the proposal seems inconsistent and incompatible with up to 6 of the 8 stated goals in the road safety strategy, especially goal 1, which is safer rural roads, but also impacting on other goals such as safer unsealed roads, safer motorcycling and safer tourists. It's hard to see these strategies being met by the access roads that have shifting surfaces, are rutted and potholed, have sections of narrower road widths and verges. There's little warning signage. Especially challenging, I would think, for tourist drivers. I know that's an impetus at the moment for council as well, but if tourist numbers really do take to these roads, they've got some serious challenges, and particularly night driving on such roads as these two would be quite a challenge. So my question is, does council intend to develop better safety standards on these access roads, or seek the applicant to fund any necessary improvements for the safer roads?
Thank you. Mr. Sullen.
Yeah, through you, Madam Mayor. The application will be referred to Council's infrastructure unit for advice, which we've alluded to previously, and they will provide advice on the standard of the road, whether it's up to it or not. This advice will form part of the assessment of the proposal. If the assessment indicates that the infrastructure upgrades are needed in order to support this particular development, these are generally set out as planning permit conditions for the developer to deliver.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for your questions. We do appreciate you coming in. Thank you. Now I've done roads, so we'll now move on to rubbish. Would Benjamin Pratt like to come up? Benjamin here, he was going to talk on food organics. No, he's not here. Okay. Moving on, now we're moving on to four speakers on the Climate Emergency Declaration, and this has been a petition that we've had trying to get to us. We've had a lot of difficulties. So these questions can be asked, but because we might be deliberating on this at another meeting, we won't be answering them, but we will let the people ask their questions tonight. So I'd now like to call on Isabella Marsh. Marshall, would you like to come up and ask your question? So they won't be answered, Isabella, but you'll be allowed to ask your question. And thank you. I see your supporters in red.
Climate justice is a phrase that frames climate emergency as an ethical and political issue, where those who contribute the least to the crisis are those who are affected first, which is a form of injustice. Do you believe climate emergency and climate emergency declaration is not purely an environmental or physical issue, but also an issue of social justice?
Thank you, Isabella, and we'll answer that in our debate. So you'll get the petition in July, just so everyone knows the process, and then that lays on the table. We get an officer's report with it, and that's when we debate it in, that'll be the August meeting. Okay, so thank you. Alex Marshall, would you like to pop up, please? Welcome, Alex.
Okay. Yes, I would like to acknowledge that the submitting of the petition was due to fault on our half, and I appreciate your cooperation.
Thank you, Alex.
So my first question is, just last night it was officially announced that Sydney has declared climate emergency. As mentioned in a statement from Lord Mayor Clover Moore, this action is in alignment with the 97% of the City of Sydney wanting strong climate action. When I speak on behalf of the over 1,000 individuals who have signed the petition, which is to be submitted for the next meeting. And I not only speak for those 1,000 active individuals, but I also speak for the many other members of the Surf Coast community and of the world who also demand strong climate action. My question is, will the Surf Coast Council declare climate emergency?
We'll tell you in August.
And
thank you very much. Did you have another one?
Yes, I do have a second question. There are over 600 governments that have declared climate emergency. Roughly 53% of the population of Britain, 49% of New Zealand, 32% of Canada, all live in jurisdictions that have declared climate emergency. Across the planet, that amounts to around 83 million citizens who are under declared climate emergency. However, all of us, almost 8 billion citizens, live under climate emergency, whether or not it's declared. Climate emergency declaration is important because it's so much more than a token gesture. It is a commitment to action, and action today, not tomorrow. Preferably yesterday, but we can't do that now. Only 8% of Australia's population live under government-declared climate emergency, and this isn't good enough. We, as a community, must cast our vote in this unofficial global referendum for declaration. We must cast our vote in support of my future, in support of the future of my siblings, my friends, my fellow millennials, your children, your grandchildren, and those who don't yet exist. Action against climate emergency declaration is an act of theft. It is an intergenerational crime against my generation and generations to follow. Because an action against declaration is an action robbing us of our future, of our right to well-being, and of our right to life. Taking into consideration the recent consultation with Adrian Whitehead, Philip Sutton and myself, and the not yet lodged but clearly evident support from our community and my words just now, I ask, what reasons would this council have to refuse climate emergency declaration?
That was one of the longest questions we've ever had, but I didn't need to let you go. We'll answer you in August.
Thank you. Okay, I appreciate your time.
Thank you. And Jarrah, would you like to come and ask your question? Welcome, Jarrah.
Madam Chair, councillors. In October 2018, the International Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, special report on global warming of 1.5 degrees clearly highlighted the significant impacts a 1.5 degree temperature increase would have on global and local ecosystems and economies. And it also significantly highlighted the impact of any temperature increase beyond this. Surf Coast community is increasingly vulnerable to the impacts of climate change, with the impacts of the current 1 degree of warming already being felt through increased and prolonged fire risk seasons, drought conditions, and noticeable weather extremes resulting in damage to local infrastructure and businesses. The climate risks facing our communities, local businesses, natural ecosystems, personal health and well-being will actually continue to escalate unless we take immediate action to address the climate change both globally and locally. In the same report, scientists call for the rapid decarbonisation of economies by 2030 if we are to have any chance of mitigating the worst impacts of climate change. And this is in an order of a 45% decarbonisation by 2030, which is actually a similar target that has been recommended to the Victorian government in their own pursuit of chasing net zero. Without significant action between now and 2030, we'll actually pass several tipping points that will lock in temperature increases beyond 2 degrees, with devastating impacts to social, economic, and environmental systems. The need to act now is urgent. It's my understanding that the declaration of a climate emergency and a commitment to urgently align all council actions with decarbonising our community in accordance with scientific evidence could be done tonight in this very meeting. The agenda of this meeting could be edited by raising a resolution under Council Meeting Procedures 15.2 to alter the agenda of this meeting and include a resolution on declaring a climate emergency within urgent business.
I'll stop you there. It can't happen. Okay, Jarrett, no. It's not urgent business. It is urgent business, but not in the definition of our local law act. So I'm trying to give you, I'm giving it very lenient, but we don't go down that path. It should be on the agenda tonight.
Okay. All right, and then so I'll end with the question then. I ask, are you willing to declare a climate emergency?
Well, you'll know in August. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Being very lenient. Thank you very much. And Will Marshall? Thanks, Will. Welcome.
Thank you. It's clear with the millions of students globally striking for climate in recent months that young people want climate action that will ensure a safe future for our generation. All school climate strikes call for strong climate actions and many call for emergency declaration. My question is, what is your response to these calls?
Well, we'll see the petition in July and the debate on in August. So thank you very much, and thank you for your patience with that petition. Now, David Cheatley, not here? No. Benjamin Pratt? No. Any other questions without notice? No. Okay. We'll now move into the agenda. And councillors, I propose that we consider item 5.2, the Great Ocean Road Regional Tourism 3-year funding agreement, prior to item 4.1 and the declaration of the rates and adaption of the 2019-20 budget that excludes the GORT allocation. Do I have a mover for that? You're out of the room even for this. Okay, I'll just wait. Sorry about that. Thank you, Councillor Bell. And Councillor Duke, all those in favour? The motion is carried. So now 4.1. 5.2 comes up before 4.1. Okay. Now councillors will move into the agenda. Yeah, you can get back. Thanks everyone for coming for your questions. We do appreciate it. Okay, thank you. Thanks, everyone. Okay, we've 1.1 is the petition requesting to maintain the current fees for the Bellbrae Heart Space. Do I have a mover for this petition? Just accepting it. Thank you, Councillor Smith and Goldsworthy. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 2.1, this is the planning permit application for Point Grey Lawn redevelopment and referral to the Great Ocean Road Regional Standing Advisory Committee. Do I have...
I'd like to...
Councillor Goldsworthy?
I'd like to move a motion on this one, please.
Yes.
That council not request the Minister for Planning refer the planning permit application 18-0508 for 3-9 Ocean Road South Lawn to the Great Ocean Road Regional Standing Advisory Committee.
Okay.
And two, continue with the normal processing of the planning permit application 18-0508, pursuant to the statutory requirements of the Planning and Environment Act 1987.
Okay, you're moving that, Councillor Goldsworthy. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Bell. Councillor Goldsworthy, if you'd like to speak on this.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Point Grey is a highly valued asset of the Lawn community and a significant landmark, and the use and the development of the point is intrinsic to the settlement history of the town, including its roles in forestry, fishing and recreation. Significant public consultation has been undertaken with the community over the past 10 years, with many amendments and improvements in the design reflecting significant community input that has been listened to by the applicant, the Great Ocean Road Coastal Committee, for this entire precinct. I do not believe that referring this project will add value, but rather involve additional cost, and it will also further delay the application. Council officers have significant expertise to evaluate this application, place it on public exhibition, and then determine council's position, or alternatively, councillors have the opportunity to call in the application for this decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy. Councillor Bell, do you have anything else to add for that one?
Very briefly, Madam Mayor, our planning department has considerable expertise, and I think we should utilise that expertise in this matter. The standing committee, it's an interesting process that will take several years for the new Great Ocean Road planning authorities to take possession, to be positioned properly. I think it's well worth us bearing with our planning department, who will carry out the same functions as what was proposed.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. Would anyone else like to speak on this? Councillor Wellington?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm actually rather surprised that because this proposal was put forward, as I understand it, via officers and the Planning Department, presumably, to Council to suggest that we should refer this off. The body that's been established, it is new, but it's highly skilled. It's more like a panel process, as I would read it. It's made up of a series of expert planners and a couple of others with expertise in relevant areas. I personally would have thought that the size and significance of this application... it's not always that I find myself agreeing with council officers, particularly in the planning area, I have to be honest, but I do, in this circumstance, feel that the size and significance of this application justifies a level of independent scrutiny, and the fact that the government has put this body together and has clearly put people on it who are highly skilled and very specialised and quite independent of the local process, from my perspective... I believe it would be worthwhile to refer it, and I do recognise the issues around delay. This process seems to have been delayed already. I was going to ask a question about why it had taken the time it has taken for this to come to council, actually, because and I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about delays in our planning processes, but I think that this is a sensible proposal from officers, and I support it. So I'm going to vote against that.
Anyone else like to speak on this? No, Councillor Goldsworthy, did you want to close?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Well, the planning application was only lodged on the 3rd of December 2018, so it hasn't sat very long with Council or with the officers, and there has been a number of issues that has not been able to move this planning application forward because there was insufficient information from the applicant, and also... under the Marine and Coastal Act of 2018, until that consent is given, then it has to be given in conjunction with our planning application permit. It's interesting, when you analyse what officers recommended about reviewing the development, and the advisory committee members were to have expertise in strategic and statutory land use planning, architecture, urban design and landscape architecture, marine and coastal environment science, environment and biodiversity, transport planning, traditional owner values, heritage, tourism and economic viability. The five members of that panel are all planners under the Victorian planning body. So I don't see that they have got the expertise to adequately assess something that has been assessed over and over again by all of the relevant authorities in the past 10 to 12 years.
Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy. I now put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Moving on to 3.1, the Workplace Health and Safety Report of June 2019. The purpose of this report is to present strategic and significant workplace health and safety issues to the Council. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor McKittrick, and thank you, Councillor Duke. Councillor McKittrick.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This report indicates that there's no significant issues in the month of June. There's no notifiable incidents, no reported incidents, no improvement notices and no workplace visits. There are issues around strategic issues, ensuring that there's mental health workplace training will be undertaken. There's a significant amount of our officers undertaking that. And also there's internal audits for the Lawn Transfer Station, the Winchelsea Transfer Station and the Torquay Men's Shed. So, look, it's good that we get this report each month. It's transparent. Obviously, a good working environment at this stage, and if there isn't, we're fully aware of what's going on.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Councillor Duke?
Well, thank you, Councillor McKittrick. You actually took a couple of my words from there, but there's 180 of the staff here that are actually going to take out the mental health course over this month. The other good thing about this report, it was actually brought up to us in November last year to come to us and to put it out for the community to see what's happening within in this area. We have a clean sheet, as Councillor McKittrick said, and well done on the staff and the safety and the safety that the staff put into their work days and what they do.
Thank you, Councillor Duke. Does anyone want to speak on this? Councillor Wellington.
Yeah, thanks very much, Madam Mayor. The first thing I'd like to say again is that I don't agree with the policy that says councillors individually, those of us sitting around the table, are responsible for ensuring or creating a safe work environment for the 300 plus staff and the visitors who come into our facilities. We can't possibly do it, so the whole policy framework's a bit off centre in my view. But nevertheless, if we're serious about governing workplace health and safety, we actually need systematic reports about the design and performance of our systems, not ad hoc incident and news-based reports such as the one we have here tonight. They're interesting. About half a page of information that says we haven't had any incidents this month tells me nothing about whether next month we'll come along and find that somebody's died or been seriously injured in our workplace. Tells me nothing at all about that. I think we should reflect that Melbourne Health was in the news. My background's in health and I've sat on health boards for a long time and dealt with workplace health and safety governance in those settings. Melbourne Health has just recently been charged by WorkSafe Victoria with failing to ensure a safe workplace in relation to a patient who died, and that exposes members of the board of Melbourne Health to attributed liability depending on the circumstances, of course, but I would imagine that there's a great deal of anxiety at Melbourne Health at the moment. I would be extraordinarily surprised if Melbourne Health received a half-page report like this once a month and was satisfied with their workplace health and safety as a result of that. What do we know out of this report? We know that one of our 300-plus employees has undergone training in a particular area. We don't know about the training status of our other 299-plus staff, other than we know some of them are going to do mental health training or a substantial proportion, which is good. We know one policy and procedure is under review, but we know nothing as a council about the suite of policies and procedures that cover workplace health and safety across our shire. We know three audits have been completed without critical issues. We know that action plans were needed. We don't know what was in them, and we don't know how adequate they are. We don't have, we know we have safety system certification, but of course that is not of itself adequate to ensure good governance of workplace health and safety. And in fact, if it were, of course, there'd be no emphasis on the roles of directors or boards at all. And we know that there were no major incidents, but as I said, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. I've been sitting in an office in a health service and been told we've had a catastrophe, and we certainly didn't have any previous catastrophes of that nature, but what it highlights is you need to look at your systems and understand your systems. It is my view that workplace health and safety is not governed at Surf Coast Shire. It may well be managed quite effectively. I'm sure it perhaps is, but as a governing body, we have absolutely no ability to determine how well it is being managed from the sort of reports that are being presented to us. We have no capacity to oversee the efficacy of occupational health and safety systems and programs, and that is what WorkSafe Victoria says governing bodies must do. And I would defy anyone to look at this report and tell me that you could tell the strength of our OH&S systems from it. So I'm not critical of the staff at all. I'm, you know, we get some interesting tidbits of information, but that is all that we get. And I just think that we're kidding ourselves if we think that we are properly governing workplace health and safety in this shire. Thanks, Madam Mayor. So I think given that I, as an individual councillor, are supposedly responsible for the safety of people in our facilities, I think some indulgence by council of individual councillors would be appropriate in the circumstances. So my view is, if we are going to take governance of occupational health and safety seriously, the CEO must remove his unwillingness to report Councillor operational... Madam Mayor,
please.
Excuse me, Madam Mayor.
Over time.
I'll ask for an extension of time. Thanks, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. 15 seconds.
So my view is that if we are to govern occupational health and safety, we must have access to operational information. We currently have a protocol that says councillors must
thank
not
you,
ask
Councillor
for
Wellington.
It.
That's
I would say that must be
you.
Removed. And I would also, Madam Mayor, that debate is a good thing.
I know.
And it's not a good thing to shut down respectful,
down.
Polite...
I think you've said it at plenty. That
well, Madam Mayor, I'll leave the gallery to decide whether that's I've been right. shut down. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think you've said enough. Any other councillors like to speak on this? Councillor Goldsworthy.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Look, it's quite interesting that we have a council of had nine and now we've got seven, but we'll get back to nine over the next few months. And everyone on the council, I believe, and what I've experienced over the last six to seven years, we all have very good skills in certain things. My skills happen to be in finance and audit and things like that. Other people have skills in whether it's waste management or whether it's CTVs and public consideration for traffic and all the rest of it. And what I find actually quite disturbing is that we're just being told from Councillor Wellington, I acknowledge she is a health expert, and we could use her help and support. And the way to do that is to somehow get to a position that when we have an agenda item like this come up on our briefings, that at some point a time can be arranged for Councillor Wellington to be there to help guide other councillors in this very important matter. Thank you,
Councillor Goldsworthy. Yes, you can.
If you don't mind, thank you. People will be aware I don't come to briefings because they're always scheduled in daytime working hours and I have a full-time job. And also, frankly, because the environment at the moment is quite hostile.
Oh,
but
thank you, Councillor
I'm quite
Wellington.
Willing to come to briefings if they're scheduled, as every other council in the state schedules them, in the late afternoon, early evening, to accommodate people who work. So from my perspective, the inability of, you know, the way that our briefings are scheduled is actually discriminatory. And excluding people who have full-time jobs. So I'm quite happy to discuss that, and I thank you for raising it.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Councillor...
Sorry, can I respond?
Yes, and then that's it. Then we're moving on to other people.
And I'll be very brief. I actually said at a time that was convenient.
Thank you,
so let's put it on record as such, although it's there already. Thank you.
Thank you very much. No, thank you. Thank you. Did anyone else like to speak on this? Councillor McKittrick, would you like to close? Enough? Okay. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Sorry, did you vote for it?
No, I'm voting it? Just to note it, of course, not to.
Okay,
not to
thank you. Moving on to 5.2, we're bringing that up the schedule. This is the Great Ocean Road Regional 3-year plan, which I think you're leaving the room, Councillor Goldsworthy. Thank you. And the purpose of this report is to note the recent consultation outcomes with trader groups and commercially rated businesses and to consider a new proposed 3-year funding agreement with the Great Ocean Road Regional Tourism, which is known as GORT. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Duke. Councillor Smith.
This is actually just restructuring our agreements, and in fact, if we weren't allocating funds back to the trader groups, we'd probably come out square. But it is bringing us into line with a funding agreement that actually goes on a more on a per capita basis, and we will be supporting our business trading groups as we actually transition from transition the process around the marketing, and I think this will probably be a good outcome for us. It's a 3-year agreement. It does actually allow for a review over the time frame as well, so I support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Duke.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. It brings us in line with the other councillors on this Great Ocean Road. So I look forward to working with the other councillors on this process.
Would anyone else like to speak on this one? No, Councillor Smith, did you want to say anything else? I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Would you like to get Councillor Goldsworthy? Thank you. Moving on to 4.1, the declaration of the 2019-20 rates and adoption of the 2019-20 annual budget, excluding the GORT allocation. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor McKittrick and Councillor Smith. Councillor McKittrick.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This Council has undertaken the legislative requirement in presenting the 2019-2020 annual budget to the community and adoption by the Council. The draft budget was exhibited for a month between the 25th of April and the 27th of May. We undertook a hearing of submissions where there were 134 submissions presented, and a number of those people spoke right in this room in relation to budget issues. Amendments were made as a result of those hearing submissions, so we did listen to the community, and of course there is budgetary restraints in regards to what can be allowed by people requesting for funding and grants for something that's very important to them. It's significant that a number of people in the community are involved in this budget. A significant amount of our staff were involved with lengthy time undertaking the budget, and also councillors were heavily involved. There are important figures in this budget, and figures are the main thing in regards to what people want to know. $41,453,399 will be undertaken through rates. $12,357,931 will be undertaken in annual service charges. $7.1 million of that will be urban garbage rates. $4.6 million will be for municipal charges. It is necessary that we undertake these charges to ensure we have sufficient funding to run the council for the next 12 months. So over $53.8 million will be raised in these charges and services, and we are very mindful that it's your money. It's your money, Ralph, and we're ensuring that we're going to spend that money correctly. There's a surplus of $18.2 million. There'll be new borrowings over $3 million. And there'll be capital works delivery of $26.9 million. So there's a lot of figures, a lot of money involved. And it's very important to note that the rate increase will be 2.5% as per the rating strategy issued by the State Government of Victoria. And the waste charges will be held also at 2.5%. This is very significant, as we all know, that the management of waste in the future will be a very difficult situation. And we need to work wisely in regards to how we manage waste, how we collect waste, and how the community puts waste into its bins, and that will be something we'll be working through in the next 12 months. The budget has been developed by Council fully aware of the significant of financial challenges we have in the future. A long-term financial plan predicts challenges in allocated cash reserves, and it relates to the discretionary funding and the support projects that the Shire need to undertake in the future. We can't rely on grants alone, and we need the funding to ensure we can undertake these infrastructure for the future. Ongoing business transformation, collaboration with other like-minded councils, real business improvement and better practices will be necessary to ensure a viable and financially sound Surf Coast Shire. This council is prepared for the challenges, and I strongly urge all councils to adopt this budget tonight.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Councillor Smith.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick, for giving such a great overview of the budget. I am pleased to actually have been here the other week when we had people from the community making submissions and submissions of things that they think are important to the community and they'd like to actually see in our budget. Of course, it does become an issue sometimes that we can't always put in all items in for the community, but there are some that can be referred to on grant through grant programs, but well, I'm pleased to actually that we've been able to respond to many of the submissions, that were around hall hire and those fees, and that we're now reverting to only CPI while we work on how categories should actually be worked through. We've responded to safety concerns with footpath work in Dean's Marsh and Anglesey, and also access to a public toilet at the quay. There's also been funds allocated to upgrade the sound equipment at the Anglesey Memorial Hall in relation to a submission made by the sound doctor, and that will be seeking matching funding. And if you don't know how important and how worthy that sound doctor is, you only needed to read The Australian at the weekend, where a reference to a touring band said that they were playing in Melbourne, Sydney and Anglesey. So I think that points to the fact of how successful we are about getting really good bands there. There are other lots of information there about what we're doing within each community. I will say that I look at the numbers, and I know that many of the projects are being funded in Anglesey, so from an equity basis we're getting actually what we might need, but there will be other projects that maybe will require significantly more contributions over the years. So our equity share may be improving at that time. It's another interesting thing that you might look at in the budget is the where the actual funds come in for our capital projects, and it's really almost half from direct funding, half another quarter from grants, and then the rest from borrowing and cash reserves. Just as a sort of quick off the cuff summary of that. So it's good use of money being able to match things with grants, and also a good time to be borrowing. The other thing that's also in the budget that's really important is this cultural hub, and it's not, I know it got confused around a performing arts space. It is a performing arts space, but it's bigger than one just for a single troupe. It's for what we actually might need for the future around Torquay, and it would include other arts spaces like exhibition space and something very dear to my heart, a library. A new library. We already have a library, but it's probably about half the size it should be. And we've also been able to respond to the arts community with a contribution to a strengthening program. So I'd like to thank the officers that have put in lots of hard work into pulling this budget together. It's becoming increasingly hard to balance things under a rate capping regime, but I think we've got a good outcome here.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak on this? No? Councillor McKittrick, would you like to close?
Madam Mayor, I just finally want to say that we're in good hands. The community should be assured that despite rate rate capping and despite the increased pressure on councils, that this budget ensures that we can look forward in the future. And we're very mindful, as the CEO has said, that in years to come there'll be a tightening around expenditure. So we need to ensure that we can, this is the foundation for that future.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 4.2, the rating strategy. The purpose of this report is to present the Surf Coast Shire rating strategy for council for adoption. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Goldsworthy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The rating strategy, it's actually rates that always seem to get people a bit confused on what actually happens with rates, but our rate increase of 2.5% is in line with the Victorian Government Fair Go rate system, and that basically on average would be what the average ratepayer would see as an increase. However, the actual rating strategy does not actually give the council any more revenue except the 2.5% increase from the Fair Go rate system. So it actually affects how the rate burden is distributed across different categories of the ratepayers. And so this went out to consultation for public comment, and we received 4 submissions back on the rating strategy. One of the key changes in what was recommended or is recommended tonight is that the existing vacant residential land differential, which is currently double the rate of the general residential rate and applies to 772 properties, is recommended to reduce that back to the standard general residential rate. It's interesting, that impact on our revenue or moving the rate, it's not actually on the revenue, it's moving the rate that the residential properties in 2018-19 raised $2.3 million, and this financial year going forward that will be actually half, but then that $1 million is then spread across the other general residential rate, farm rate, commercial rate, vacant rate. So overall, we can do what we can with the current rating strategy. The garbage charges are remaining will only go up at the 2.5% as well. You know, I think that there's an argument that they should go up much higher, given where we're heading with garbage. A garbage crisis. However, we do have, and we've looked at it from a financial perspective, that our reserves are significant at this point. So I'm sure it's something that we'll have to look at next year. But for the moment, they'll remain where they are.
Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy. Councillor Smith?
I just want to focus on that vacant residential rate that we actually had there, that we've now got that it's almost halved the number of vacant properties since 2013, and the properties that are left there are often ones that sort of have significant bushfire overlays on it, and we don't have the same infill, and so it's probably it's served its purpose, and it's time to actually remove that and revert it back to a general residential.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Did anyone else like to speak on this one? No? Any closing remarks, Councillor Goldsworthy? No? I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 4.3, the Infrastructure Special Rate or Charge Scheme. The purpose of this report is to present an updated Infrastructure Special Rate or Charge Scheme policy for endorsement by Council. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Duke. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Bell. Councillor Duke.
So this is an updated, it's just an improvement to what was written down there. So there's a lot of things. I find the scheme Special rate scheme, very important, particularly now we've got one in operation up around the Baines Road there in Baines Court, where the property's there. When they went to them and asked them whether they'd be happy to put into the special rate scheme, they were all actually said were quite happy with their businesses and they wanted to have a footpath put in, so they were happy for that to happen along there. And it's going to improve access for people with disabilities and things, so I think the special rate scheme works in certain areas. It certainly is not something that's supposed to be a burden on people. It does cost people sometimes, but council are willing to work it off in time to pay it off over time. So it's one of those things that if you want the service, it's not provided for you at the front of your place or footpaths or whatever, then it can be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Duke. Councillor Bell?
Special charge schemes guaranteed to raise the ire of just about everyone in certain circumstances, but it is a way of, rather than spreading the benefits accrue to a small number of people, and rather than the whole of the Shire paying for something, perhaps it is a more equitable way. The Shire funds a large percentage of the cost, and then the people who are actually benefiting most pick up the rest of the cost. I think it's a very good system. I like the tweaks that have happened, and I think it should serve us well.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. Anyone else like to speak on this? Councillor Duke to close? No? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. 4.4, the Dickens Road drainage. The purpose of this report is to provide Council with an update on the Dickens Road drainage matters. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Councillor Smith?
I think in reading the report, there has obviously been a number of changes that have gone over a period of time in that Dickens Road area, and requests from the community to assist in that. And this report just closes out the review on the last lot of actions that were actually done, 12 months of monitoring of the catchment. It's probably only in the last 3 or 4 weeks that we've actually had any decent rain in that 12 months, and I'm led to believe that we have not had any further contact even in that short period. So hopefully it is an outcome that is right for that community, and I note that the balance of funds that were allocated will now go back to the accumulated unallocated cash reserve.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor McKittrick?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Previously I've been involved with, a minor committee that was involved with a number of residents in Dickens Road who had concerns about their rural properties, and indicating that the possibility of drainage work that had been done on the road had resulted in a build-up of overflow or water flow during significant rain situations that resulted in some flooding that hadn't been undertaken before. There had been a lot of consultation with that community. Drainage had been undertaken. There were some issues around private landowners placing in levees, etc., which I believe are being investigated ongoingly. That could be significantly the result of some of those landowners suffering from flooding. And the undertaking of this 12 months indicates from the actual officers that there's been no further issues around that. I'm aware that several of those landowners have moved recently, but at this stage, unless there's some further, and I think important that if there's some further acknowledgement by or community indicating there's issues there, that we could relook at it. But at this stage, this is the process we've undertaken.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Does anyone else want to? Councillor Wellington?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Yes, I've been involved with this, I think, probably about 6 years as well. And it is actually a really quite a tricky problem. It is a low-lying area, and perhaps one might think, you know, planning decisions in the past might have not really perhaps been as good as they could have been. But I think the situation has been exacerbated. As Councillor McKittrick said, there's an earth bund that has been formed, and that is being dealt with, but it all does seem to take an enormously long period of time. The property owners seem to believe that development at the top end of the catchment with increasing hard surfaces is causing more runoff down to this part of the catchment, and also that works on the Surf Coast Highway when the Surf Coast Highway was actually raised have caused water to back up there. So it's actually quite a complex situation, and unfortunately there didn't seem to be a solution that everybody could kind of live with really down there. And so for the moment, I guess we wait and see. I do think the recommendation is that notwithstanding the dry climate, there have been no material changes. I would have thought that might say because of the dry climate, there's been no material issues noticed, and we might wait and see when the dry climate really does change and we get some... Because what happens is it's the episodic, very heavy fall which causes the problem here. My prediction is it will not go away and we'll have a continuing problem. And I would... maybe the movers might like to look at the wording in the motion, but it's a bit immaterial anyway. But I suppose my view is that the dry climate probably has... it's been 12 months of watch and there's not been a great deal of risk. So who knows what will happen when the climate changes again. I expect we'll be back here.
Okay.
I'm hoping by that stage the earth bund will be dealt with in some way so that there's no suggestion that that's causing the problem.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Would anyone else like to speak on this one? Councillor Smith, did you want to close? No. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 4.5, the quarterly report for road management activities. The purpose of this report is to provide council and the community with an overview of the key road management activities carried out during the period January to March 2019. Do I have a mover? You can have clarification.
Oh, just a question, Madam Mayor. My question is, I know the council... community satisfaction survey was conducted a few months ago, and I'm wondering whether we have the results of it and whether we know what the community satisfaction in the Winchelsea ward is for unsealed roads maintenance.
And Ms.
So,
Howard?
Through you, Madam Mayor, happy to take that question from Councillor Wellington. Thank you. The community satisfaction survey result has been distributed across the state. We've not had ours for very long and we're still working through that because there are a lot of questions, a lot of detail. Of course, we have looked at the unsealed roads and we've seen a favourable shift in the Winchelsea ward for unsealed roads.
Can I just ask how much?
I'd rather not quote a number off the top of my head without the report in front of me, but it was more than the statistical sort of deviation.
Okay, thank you.
Do I have a mover?
I'll move.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Bell. Councillor Wellington.
Thanks very much, Madam Mayor. Look, there is some very interesting information in this report, obviously. One of my long-standing issues has been the 30% satisfaction in the Winchelsea ward with unsealed roads, which has been, rock solid for years. Since I've been a councillor, we've had 70% of people in my ward that have been very dissatisfied with the standard of their roads. And we have a road management plan that sets standards, and then we report against it and we say we met the standards, but the fundamental question is, are the standards adequate? Of course. And so and my recollection is, although I've been told recently I'm wrong, but my recollection is that we actually changed the standards so that they were a bit easier to meet at some point during my term as a councillor. Mm. But Ms Howard tells me I'm wrong, so I acknowledge that we have a difference of view on that. I did drive down to Gunflats Road to talk to the residents on Saturday, the ones who were here tonight worrying about the access to the restaurant. And I have to be honest, there's potholes this deep and this down that road. So I'm just not sure how, you get reports from the community about the standard of their roads and then you drive around and you see things and you think, how does this work? I don't quite get that. What I will say is I've had far fewer complaints in the past 6 months or so than I've had previously about unsealed roads, about the standard of maintenance of unsealed roads, and whether that's because I know last year we put more money into... we bought a roller. We paid a roller driver. And we put somebody onto customer service. And I was never able to work out how much money we spent on each of those because I was told I wasn't allowed to know. But I know we did it, and maybe that's the reason we're getting better, or I'm getting fewer complaints. I don't know. Or maybe the weather's been different, or maybe it's a combination, whatever. But perhaps something's changed. So what this report tells us is that there's a great deal of activity I did see an email the other day from somebody who said that their road had been graded in a way that was much improved compared to the past. And I know we put our drivers through, I did hear that we put our drivers through and our roller drivers and what have you through more training. So I know a bit that we're actually responding, you know, I haven't got a systematic view as I normally would expect on a governing body about the whole process, but I get bits and pieces of information which makes me think that we are doing better than we were. So that's good. The only other point I would like to make is that whilst this report is valuable, it is valuable, it's a quarterly report, we have got as councillors in our monthly agenda papers this month almost 1,000 pages of paper. And those pages have all been written by somebody, an officer. And what I would say is, so there's about 500 in the papers that are in the public agenda, and there's about, or 450, and there's another 400 and something or in the pages that are in the risk committee agenda. So that's nearly 1,000 pages that somebody has had to write. And what I would say is, are we using our valuable officer time as well as we can by presenting these massive reports to councillors? Are we all capable? We have got the time to read them? Do we all have the interest to read them? I don't know. Do we need to read them? Or I've never sat on a board where I've had 1,000 pages in a month, and I've run commercial car parking company, I've run Peter Mac Cancer Institute. I've never had to have this volume of paper, and I quiver for our officers, and I think I'd like our people to be out there delivering the service rather than writing reports that may or may not hit the spot in terms of people needing to read them. So that would be my comment. It's a nice report. Do we need it quarterly? I don't think so. Maybe 6 monthly might streamline it a bit. Is there other ways we could get information that might give us a really clear view about, you know, the standards, the program, the breakdown of the complaints we get? I see we're coming to our complaints policy later, and we're told councillors may or may not be told the outcomes of complaints that community members make. That's a problem for me. We need to know. No. We need to know what complaints are being made. We need to know where they're being made. We need to know how they're being responded, etc. So it's interesting information. But just a few qualifications about whether or not we're on the right track in this kind of reporting to council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Councillor Bell.
I live on an unsealed road. Sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's not so really good, but it gets regularly inspected, it gets regularly maintained. I have another friend who lives out in the wilds of some of the back blocks of this thing, and his main complaint is that the people around him expect to drive at 100 kilometres an hour on roads that were never designed or built to be driven on at 100 kilometres an hour. I find the reporting that we get from our officers very good. I actually have, and it might make me somewhat strange, a good read. I do quite enjoy it. Very seldom does my head hit the keyboard while I'm reading it, so I find it interesting. It's probably the biggest problematic area that any council has will be the unsealed roads, because a made road, as we call them, is really just an unsealed road with a waterproof cover on top of it. So if you have a road that doesn't have that waterproof cover, they will alter very rapidly, they will alter quickly. I think we do a very good job on our roads by and large. There are a few that seem to have been formed in creek beds, which is probably a planning issue rather than a road maintenance issue that we have. I appreciate the reports, and I appreciate the work that our officers put into producing these reports, and I appreciate the work that goes into maintaining our road system.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Did anyone else want to speak on this? Councillor Smith?
No, Madam Mayor.
Oh, what did I say?
Councillor Lilly.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at you. I do apologise.
I must be on your mind.
No, I was looking at waiting for you to move. Councillor Smith.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I just want to make sure from the gallery's perspective that they don't leave with the view that we've actually got issued with nearly 1,000 pages of work on Friday and expected to read them all of that, and that officers did all the work, because they didn't do all the work, because some of the 450 pages that makes up the audit and risk is done done by work is done by contractors. A lot of the reports that we've got in here is rating strategy budgets. They actually come back, so we've already seen them again before. We've got the minutes of the many groups, Section 86 groups and the advisory committees, and this, they actually get done by the wonderful people that are out serving on those community groups. I know this has got nothing to do with road management activities, but I will say road management activities, it's a really good report on 11 pages, and I really I think we do actually appreciate receiving it.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Did anyone else like to speak on it? Councillor Goldsworthy?
I'd just like to clarify something, Madam Mayor. The community satisfaction survey was circulated by the CEO to all councillors on the 7th of June 2019, which was only 3 weeks ago.
Thank you.
It's also interesting to note that in the areas of significantly higher performance than in our peer group, both sealed roads and unsealed roads rated higher than our peer groups.
Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy.
An improvement on previous years.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak on it? Councillor Wellington, would you like to close?
Thanks very much, Madam Mayor. Yeah, look, the issue with the community satisfaction survey, we have unsealed roads in the Winchelsea ward and we have unsealed roads in other wards, and we have consistently had 30% satisfaction with the Winchelsea ward when we've actually always been a little bit above our peer groups as on the Shire as a whole for unsealed roads. So it's been, and the report, the community satisfaction report for year after year after year, the whole time I've been on council, has said there are three areas that council needs to address, and unsealed roads has consistently been one of them, unsealed roads in the Winchelsea ward. So I think we need to break down, you know, clearly the roads are different from the unsealed type of roads we've got in the, perhaps in the Anglesey ward or whatever, where they're more on a suburb, sort of more on quiet suburban streets. So but I'll be very interested to see, I haven't actually looked at that report, but I'll be interested to see what the Winchelsea ward level is this year and whether or not it has improved, because the Winchelsea ward has the greatest burden of unsealed roads, obviously. In terms of the report...
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Madam Mayor, but you're just muttering in my ear.
I just said thank you. You're going back to the report. It wasn't muttering. I said thank you.
In terms of the report, of course, it's always interesting to get this information. I certainly don't want to suggest to officers it's not interesting. It is interesting. But what I'm suggesting is that we might need to look at both the systematisation, I guess, of the type of information we get about road management. We need the good, the bad and the ugly, not just, you know, not just the activity stats and not just the good. So we actually need to know. We've got information about complaints. I think from a governance perspective, we should know what type of complaints, where were they, blah, 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 you know, a little bit more information so we can actually make decisions when we decide on the budget and whatever. But it is an interesting report. I agree with what everyone has said. I agree with, you know, Councillor Duke, Councillor Bell. I've lived on unmade roads myself, not at the moment, but I certainly drive on a lot of them. And I have my own personal experience, but I actually like to look at systematic data that deals with complaints and assessments and standards and outcomes and sort of do it more on a kind of a global basis rather than relying on my own personal experience all the time. So the recommendation is that we note the report and we look forward to the data and information that comes from the customer satisfaction survey. If we find ultimately, I'm very aware of Councillor Bell's comments that people's expectations are too high, which is effectively what he says about unsealed roads, that people's expectations are too high. Ultimately, as a council, we might come to that view and we might say, I'm sorry, that's the standard, that's what you get, and your expectations are too high. But let's have that discussion with the community and be transparent and open about it and actually really analyse, you know, the complaints people are making, why they're making them, and make it a systematic assessment as to whether or not their expectations are too high. My sense of the rural community is that they... I don't think that's the case personally, from my personal experience, but I'm happy to be found wrong if the data supports it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 4.6, the council replacement representation on various boards, due to the fact Councillor McGregor and Councillor Coker are no longer with us. Do I have a mover for this? please. Thank you, Councillor Duke. A seconder? Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Councillor Duke?
As many of you know, councillors work on not only just here, they also work on lots of other boards out there. We hear from the councillors of the different sections they work in, Audit Risk. I've got the opportunity this time to work with the Municipal Association of Victoria. I'm looking forward to that as one of my things taken there. We've had people change different positions. So with the meetings that we have, there's certainly a lot of events on and a lot of meetings that people go to at different organisations across. So councillors are not just here, they're actually out there doing a lot more work within the community on the boards, disability boards and everything else. So well done to them.
Thank you, Councillor Duke. Councillor McKittrick, did you want to say anything?
Thanks,
on this?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Actually, the reasoning for this agenda item is because of Councillor Coker and Councillor McGregor leaving. So there's a number of vacancies on several of the boards and committees that we're on. So this is ensuring that we maintain our representation on those boards until the end of the year when they we relook at all the councillors and what boards they're on. So this is to ensure that we maintain that ability to be on there making decisions for our council.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Anyone else like to speak on this? No? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 4.7, the Project Budget Adjustments and Cash Reserve. And the purpose of this report is to present the Project Budget Adjustments and Cash Reserve Transfers for Council approval. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Smith. A seconder? Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. I appreciate it. Councillor Smith.
Well, I'm not sure why there was we were so slow in moving this, but this just providing sort of transparency in terms of budgets for particular projects and projects that are completed. There's a very long list there of projects that are being closed out, and we've got savings, and it's just good to actually see the full list of things that have been worked on and the grants that we actually received, allocation through to those particular projects. And a tidy up as we near the end of the financial year.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor McKittrick, no? Anyone else like to speak on this? No? I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 4.8, the Instrument of Appointment and Authorisation of Planning and Environment Act 1987. And the purpose of this report is to seek Council's endorsement for authorised officers under the Planning and Environment Act of 1987 through updated Instrument of Authorisation and Appointment. This request results from recent staff changes. So do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy and Councillor McKittrick. Councillor Goldsworthy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Very briefly, this is just updating in terms of the Planning and Environment Act, the names of authorised people, so it's very much procedural. So.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick.
No further.
No. Anyone else like to speak on this? No? I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to Environment Development Area, the events policy. And the purpose of this report is to present an updated events policy for adoption by Council. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Duke. A seconder? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Duke.
So this is an updated policy. It actually brings the events, most of the events, into line with the others, so as we know what they know when they come to here to ask him for what events can we run. The policy is very clear on what can be run and what can be done over the area. So it's really just an update. There wasn't a lot of change to it, but it's a nice, clear, precise thing. Well done.
Do I have it? Councillor Smith, did you want to speak on this one?
Look, I'll just highlight that it's actually to make it clearer for the event organisers, and we've put in some new sections around the council's role in events and what the application process should be, what we do around road closures, and as well as what we're actually trying to achieve. Events are very important to our economy, and making sure that they don't disrupt our communities too much is also important.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Did anyone else like to speak on this? No, Councillor Smith? No. Would you like to close? No? All right. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 5.3, the Environment and Development Monthly Report. And the purpose of this report is to receive and note the Environmental and Development Monthly Activity Report for May 2019. Do I have a mover? The head's wobbling. Thank you, Councillor Smith and Councillor Bell. Councillor Smith.
Look, again, there's some very good information in there. I actually just brought up 5.2 and I'm thinking that's not what we've got in 5.3, so I'm sorry about that. But look, there's a lot of work that gets done by actually the group, and it's really important to actually see that and the improvements that we're making in the planning. One of the key things that I will note there, because I'm from Anglesey and because the Eden project is something that's come up in the last month or so, I think we've actually made some notes there around the work that we've been doing with Alcoa and the Eden people when they came out, and I think this is something that's actually going to take an even greater focus if we are to be get an outcome of that standard within that Anglesey land area. So I look forward to seeing more on that particular issue, and I do thank the officers for actually put in there. The other thing that I just would quickly mention too is the rabbits. A couple of years ago we had a lot of discussion about how we worked with the rabbits, and particularly brought up the use of poisons, pindone in particular. And I do note that with the rabbit management program this year, the effectiveness of actually using warren destruction and surface harbour removal has been something that's been particularly effective. And again, I think that points to that program that's sort of a number of different steps, and once you actually can get on top of things, then maybe not quite as bad a death for the rabbits as what some of the poisons can be.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Bell.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd really like in the recommendation in May, 87.76 of all planning applications were issued within the 60 statutory days, which is well above the comparative average score for the rest of the peri-urban group. This really is showing the work that's been done over the last couple of years in the planning department in terms of restructuring the way it worked and restructuring how the work flows, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the pressing of the button as the e-planning portal goes into action, and that will be really the sort of almost the culmination of the work that's been done. And I'd like to thank our planning officers and the staff for the work that has been done. I know a lot of builders, they all seem to have sons who play football with my son, and I'm hearing a lot less mutterings from them. It's great.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. Anyone else? Councillor McKittrick?
I also think it's very important to note, item number two, that the planning compliance team have reached their target of 50 live investigations in May, and that's 17 of them ensured that there's compliance. It's very important that if you do have legislation, etc., you're actually able to have a team that can ensure the compliance. And I'd note that on social media recently there's people complaining that that the Shire are now sending them letters in regards to not having pool fences, etc., and having, I think that's a great thing that we know that that the Shire is ensuring the safety of children, and that people are building infrastructure without the proper safety regards are actually being found out. So this is a great implementation that's happening.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Anyone else like to speak? No, Councillor Smith, do you want to close? No. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Moving on to 6.1, the Positive Ageing Reform Readiness Plan. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Do I have a seconder? I just scratched your nose. Councillor Goldsworthy. Councillor Smith.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Look, I would start by actually acknowledging those in the in our gallery who are on this committee, and I would thank them for the work that's been done, and also acknowledge the other members that aren't here tonight. But it's a 35-page document. It's well worth a read. It's been well considered by the committee, well put together, and our officers that have been involved, Nicole, Jill and Chris, and there's probably one other that I can't remember her name, Janice? Carolyn, yes, Carolyn. Really well put together, and meeting the terms of reference that we actually always had. So this is about council being ready for the changes in the aged care services, and when we will no longer receive block funding, and so we need to actually look at what we do. So the recommendations that have come through from the committee talked about the actions that we would investigate. And they are to actually work firstly on a geographical basis with other providers, HESI Health and Lawn Community Hospitals, and work together to determine community needs, and also for the Shire to re-establish our entry-level care framework and consider there's some programs that actually don't fall within this entry-level care framework. The important thing that and principles that the committee have are really around making sure that any transition is really focused on the client and the outcome for the client, and making sure that they continue to receive quality services if the provider's going to change and there's no gaps in that service provision. We also have some work that we want to, that is being recommended around looking at a third provider back into the at the third geographical area, which is all important, Anglesey, Madam Mayor, and Torquay. So I think you'll probably be interested in that one. But this is a very good and well considered document, and I hope I have councillors' support on this one. We're also the committee is also looking at recommendations that might fall that might come forward to council around age-friendly cities projects, supporting community capacity with different activities and advocacy programs. The other thing that we've actually got there is a slight change to the terms of reference for the committee, and that is around replacement of members, making sure seeking to be able to target replacement for a geographical area, and we actually have a vacancy now, but it would be important to replace someone from, for instance, Lawn with another person from Lawn rather than from another area, and also to seek to ensure that, seek to make a change in relation to we did think we might be able to get some people from the aged care sector on, but it turns out the conflict of interest makes it particularly difficult. So it's a very well put together document. It's our reform readiness plan, and I hope councillors will support this.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Goldsworthy.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I think that's adequately covered it.
All right, thank you. Did anyone else like to speak on this one? Councillor Wellington?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor. I'd like to also acknowledge the people in the gallery who have helped with this. I just would like to say I think we're incredibly lucky in this Shire to have two really good local health services in Hess Rural Health and Lawn. I think Lawn's just amalgamated with Otway, actually, hasn't it? It's Lawn and Otway Health now. And they are better placed, in my view, than council to deliver the majority of these services. And, you know, I'm very much in favour of council limiting what it does to services that can't be delivered effectively by other providers. And in my view, this is a great opportunity for those services to do what they do as their core business. And for us to, support and complement that, but not necessarily to seek to be competing effectively with them. So from my perspective, I think the principles are heading in the right direction, and we'll have to see how this all goes. At the end of the day, consumers themselves will choose where they get their services from, and but we do need to make sure, while there'll be numerous choices in metropolitan areas, there won't be as many choices in rural and more remote areas, and we do need to make sure that services are available for people. So I think, as I said, we're very lucky to have those options available to us.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Would anyone else like to speak on this? Councillor Smith to close? I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried, and thank you again to the people on the board. Thank you. Moving on to 6.2, the complaint handling policy, and the purpose of this report is to adopt the revised complaint handling policy. Do I have a mover? Councillor Duke, thank you. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Duke.
This is another one of those policies that's been updated, but the really good thing about this policy is the update of the time. The time for complaint going through has been shortened down, so to keep people in line, and it certainly makes a bit more work on the council staff, so, but if a complaint comes through, where it was out to 28 days, now it's now down to 20. The other complaint was 13 days, down to 10, so it certainly made a big difference to complaint time, and we'll keep an eye on how the complaints are handled.
Thank you, Councillor Duke. Councillor Smith?
Yes, look, this updates it well and truly for the timing. It also sort of makes some slight changes in terms of those, how particular things are handled on being and the definitions on that, making sure that they're particularly clear. So I think this is a policy worth adopting.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Did anyone else like to speak on it? Councillor Wellington?
Thanks very much, Madam Mayor. Yeah, look, I just... I seriously object to one element of this policy, which is that the role of the councillor. So what I find in my role as a councillor is that people come to me with complaints when they've struck a bit of a brick wall with the organisation. That's what tends to happen. So they'll try and sort out their issues with the organisation, and then they'll come to me and say, you know, I've got a complaint, I've got a problem, and they look to their councillor to represent them. And people in the community think that's what we're elected for. But in fact, what our complaints policy says is if you get a complaint, you have no role in it at all as a councillor. You give it to the officers, and the officers may tell you the outcome. And what I would say to the community is that your expectation of your councillor? See, I don't know what other councillors get, but I get, you know, quite a few people coming to me. And the one I remember most is a planning issue in Belbrae where community came to me and said, we've been trying for 10 years to get council to sort out this planning problem. And I looked at it and said, well, I think there's a breach, and the organisation had been consistently telling that community for 10 years that there was no breach, and it had become very, very hostile between the community and the council. And eventually we got that sorted out, and I was able as a councillor to facilitate communication between the community and the council. And from my perspective, that is a very important and legitimate role of the councillor, and one that the community expects of us. And what we've got in this council at the moment is a series of governance reforms, and that won't come out on the audio, but I'm holding my hand up and in colloquially saying reforms, because these are not reforms. These are about stopping councillors from being involved in operational, again in quotation marks, matters, which basically means that councillors cannot fulfil the representative role that the community expects of them. Now, anyone in the community is entitled to appoint anybody as their representative, including their councillor. And I still say to my community, if you want me to get involved in operational matters, just tell me. And I'll come along and I will happily be your representative, because that's what I'm elected to do, and that is your expectation of me, and I won't walk away from that role. But you've got a policy here that says councillors will guide customers to lodge complaints directly with council. So the instruction to us is tell them to go to the info line. That's not adequate when people have already got themselves into a complaint situation with council and they turn to their councillor for representation. And then it says councillors may be contacted as part of an investigation, and in some situations, I'm not sure what, councillors will be advised of the outcome of the complaint. So, you know, my view is this is... This is another one of the governance reforms, along with the media policy that says councillors are not supposed to discuss operational matters with the media, including in a setting like this, because the media policy applies in this setting in a council meeting. So we have a series of reforms that are actually about stopping councillors doing what the community thinks they elected them to do. And many people say to me, what's the point of being a councillor? And I say, well, you can always hope for change in the future. Or you might eventually get the support of the council as a whole, the other councillors, to understand that this is not what the community wants, and the community actually wants its councillors to have respectful but active interactions with the organisation. So I do not support, this is another little, you know, slip in the little chip away at the role of the councillor. I do not support it, and I will certainly vote against it, and I will continue to tell my community, if you want me as a representative, you just tell council I'm your representative and they can talk to me in resolving your complaint. Incidentally, I believe there should be an independent council complaint management authority, in the same way that there is a Health Service Complaints Commissioner, where people who are dissatisfied with local resolution of complaints can go to a statutory body and have it reviewed efficiently, effectively. And I noticed Mrs. Lewis is in the audience tonight, and she was the Geelong Bowen Health Complaints Manager for a very long time, and we both worked in that system, and it was really effective to have, you know, internal resolution first, and certainly no barrier to councillors being sort of part of that communication chain, and then final pathway through to an independent complaints resolution authority. Thanks.
Thank you. Would any other councillor like to speak on this? No. Councillor Duke, did you want to?
Well, it might be the way that certainly Councillor Wellington mentioned it well, but I think when it says councillors guide customers to lodge complaints, it's when a complaint comes to you, instead of bringing it through yourself, you're guiding somebody else. You can still handle that complaint with the person, and it's not going to say you can't do things, but you're guiding them to that direction. It says when a councillor receives a complaint, they will be advised of the outcome by the CA or the relevant general manager, except for complaints relating to the personnel matters. So it is in there, the information there that says that we will still get the information. So I see that we're just directing the people, our constituents, to go out and say, we've got a complaint, it's coming to us, do we need to handle them all personally, or can we hand them on to the council? Thank you.
Okay. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? The motion is carried.
I have a division on that, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Wellington has called a division. Could the people that for the positive please stand up? We have Councillor McKittrick, Councillor Duke, Councillor Hodge, Councillor Smith, Councillor Goldsworthy, Councillor Bell. All those against? Councillor Wellington. Thank you. Moving on to 6.3. And this is a public space policy, and the purpose of this report is to present the closed circuit television in public spaces for adoption by council. So it's the policy. Moving, Councillor McKittrick.
I have a question, Madam Mayor, please, for clarification.
Is it in the report?
It's a question related to the report, yes.
Well, if it's in the report, it can't be a question.
No, it's not. It's not explained in the report.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, thank you. My question is, there's six criteria, I think, and there's a criteria description, and I'm just wondering, if a person in the community comes to council and says, we think there should be CCTV in a certain location, is it the expectation that they will do all these things, like define and quantify the evidence demonstrating the effectiveness of it, or, you know, demonstrate that the benefits substantially outweigh the intrusion of privacy, or provide evidence to show that it's proportionate? Is that the expectation that the person who suggests it will do it, or is it the expectation that council itself will do that work?
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Mr. Pike?
Through you, Madam Mayor. It's a bit untested, to be perfectly honest, Councillor Wellington. Typically, the proposals that we're receiving are from either from the police or from groups. So to the best of my understanding, we haven't received any proposals in recent times from an individual. All the same, Look, the way I see it working would be a partnership. Clearly there'd be some onus on a level of information being provided by a proponent for it to warrant investigation by council. Council will be in a position to supplement the efforts of that individual, mainly in the process of assessing the proposal itself. If there isn't the sufficient information, council isn't in a position, or officers I should say, aren't in a position to provide sensible advice to council about the merits of that proposal. So it's in council officers' interest to play a role in ensuring that the information's gathered so that a decision can be made by the council in an informed way.
Thank you. Councillor McKittrick, you moved it. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy. Councillor McKittrick.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Council made a commitment in the council plan to improve community safety, and it was one of our main commitments when we started in council in respect to your safety. Implementation of CCTV over recent times through councils has increased significantly. Even towns, coastal towns such as Ocean Grove and Bowen Heads have CCTV installed recently as last year. The Geelong City Council has significant investment in CCTV in its central business district and other areas, including Greater Melbourne. They work with stakeholders such as Victoria Police and community groups to ensure that they're able to utilise CCVT for the benefit of that community and the safety of communities. Fully aware that there needs to be legislative requirements, and we note here that there's four acts of Parliament that dictate how CCTV can be utilised. Actually, there's six and there's four policies. So in regards to issues around integrity of the CCTV, the use of the CCTV, there is governance around that to ensure that the safety of people, or not the safety, but the issues around privacy issues, and I'm determining how someone in a public place can undertake a statement saying that there's a privacy issue around that. Of course, if it's within a private facility or can be seen, a private house, etc., can be seen from that's obviously a situation. But CCTV outweighs any other form of policing in the community. We can look at education, we can look at signage, we can look at those sort of things. You can look at police patrols, you can look at communities such as Neighbourhood Watch. But in the end, CCTV is a deterrent to criminals, and it also ensures that criminal behaviour can be monitored and identified. And generally, particularly in the Surf Coast, crime that has occurred is undertaken by particular individuals, and they'll do it over a lengthy period of time. If they don't get caught, they continue to do that. CCTV enables police and other agencies to identify those people and to ensure their arrest. And this has occurred recently. In three summers ago, there were 47 motor vehicles stolen in the Torquay coastal area. That individual undertook that the crime spree over 2 months in summer and was detected as a result of CCT in a private retail store. So it does work. The issues are around cost, the issues around governance, the issues around MOUs with partnerships, and that's what we need to work with. There are grants available that come through annually, and it's great that this policy is out to ensure that we have the guidelines so when we actually undertake the grants we can evaluate the situation. There are some significant, subjective requirements in regards to that, I think as Councillor Wellington just indicated. But look, I think it's, we've started the process, we're ensuring we have the ability to undertake CCTV, we'll look at the costing, and even if we have a look at it in regards to forming committees so we can actually evaluate when community groups put forward an application such as Neighbourhood Watch. So, look, I strongly urge you all to approve this policy, and we can move forward, and hopefully in the future when we do have CCT that ensures the safety of our community in particular issues.
Thank you, Councillor McKittrick. Councillor Goldsworthy, did you want to speak?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Just briefly, it's the first step in this whole process of setting some ground rules and start to begin to, you know, how we take this forward. So.
Okay. Did anyone else want Councillor Wellington?
Well, Madam Mayor, I strongly agree with what Councillor McKittrick said. I support CCTV in public spaces. I mean, you're just constantly seeing news reports of people being picked up and, you know, various in criminal circumstances, mainly evidence being produced by CCTV, and we want to save community. My concern is this policy. I don't know that this policy will do it. The way I read it, if you look at criterion 5, it says the party proposing the installation of CCTV bears the responsibility to demonstrate that the proposal complies with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 8 different standards and rules. Now, how on earth is a neighbourhood watch going to do that? You know, that's impossible. They haven't got they're volunteers. You know, they haven't got the time. They may well not have the expertise or the ability to do that. So why would we write a policy that puts the onus on potentially on volunteer groups to do work of that nature? I would have thought our policy should be much more specific about saying we support CCTV in appropriate locations. We will put together some sort of a governance process to determine where it should be and what safeguards will be in place and get on with it, for goodness sake. I'm just, you know, and then we say we don't know really how it will play out because we haven't had proposals from individuals. We certainly have proposals from small groups who are legitimate, credible small groups, and we're going to put them to all this work? Surely not. Isn't that our job? I would suggest that this... I would suggest the policy needs to be reviewed and resubmitted at the next meeting, Madam Mayor.
Any other councillors like to speak on this? Councillor McKittrick, would you like to close?
No.
I'll now put the motion. All those in favour?
I'm going to vote for it, Madam Mayor.
You are?
I'm voting for it because I support CCTV. Okay.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Thank you, everyone. Moving on to 6.4, the Great Ocean Road Coast Committee draft Taylor Park Master Plan. The purpose of this report is to endorse a submission to the Great Ocean Road Coast Committee draft Taylor Park Master Plan process. Do I have a mover? Councillor Duke, thank you. And a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Duke?
So this is the master plan that's been put out by GORC. So it's a process of going through, and council officers have done a really good job of putting submission through. We've spoken to a lot of local people, including the bowling club. A few of the councillors went down to meet them. They weren't getting their submission through as well, but we've managed to put a submission in. And like all submissions, it will be considered by DWELP, so it's just a submission at this stage.
Thank you, Councillor Duke. Councillor Smith?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This refers to our views around this submission around Taylor's Park, a highly valued open space, and it there is some work that probably could have been done, which unfortunately wasn't, and that's around missing the opportunity about providing some clarity for the Torquay Bowls Club and maybe sort of enhancing the connections through the park. I know that I used to walk through that park just about every day for about 8 years that I lived in Torquay. It is a great space and it's good to actually have a master plan on it, but there are some other things that could have gone in there, but I thank the officers for putting together this and look, it will be interesting to see where it goes from here.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Did anyone else want to speak on this one? No, Councillor Duke, any closing words?
Only 8 years through there. I've had my business down there for 21 years and continued walking through there and seeing the changes in the trees. No, it's fine.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Duke. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 6.5, an update on a membership update, and the purpose of this report is to request Council to authorise the changes in the Anderson Road Night Section 86 Committee of Management. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Smith. A seconder? Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy. Councillor Smith?
It's great to see we're able to pick up a volunteer and replace a volunteer.
I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to the 6.6, the Quarterly Report Community Project Development Update. The purpose of this report is to receive the Community Project Development Recommendations. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Duke. Councillor Smith.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So we've been putting allowing the community to submit projects to council for consideration, and some have actually been funded through the budgets at different times. We've got a new review now of some four projects that are considered having discussed with the community that may be considered to be come through on future prioritisation and maybe through a future budget. Now, I understand there might be some additional concerns or discussions that we might want to have on at least one of them, but there are more generally, they are projects that we've had discussions with the community, but they're not fully worked through in regards to, actually there's three of them, not four of them, in the case of one of them. The Anglesey Art House landscape project, where stage one's actually been funded 100% by the Art House group, and it'll be interesting to see if we can actually get the stage two, which will take those wonderful fish that came from the Commonwealth Games and make them a feature out the front. And we've also got priority projects that will be further investigated, and that relates to the Anglesey RSL and the Cedar Tree Long Distance Horse Trail that's been talked about within the community. So these are investigations. They're not, they are actually prioritisation and looking at what we might do for the future, but they are not, they need to be worked through another program through through council, either through the budget or through grants.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Duke? No. Did anyone else like to speak on this? Councillor Wellington?
The project that we're talking about, Madam Mayor, as councillors would know, is the Kalkara Park Play Space basketball netball pad proposal. That's the one that there's some discussion about. I've had contact from a neighbour who was unable to be here tonight, but is really very concerned about that proposal, raising issues about noise nuisance and creating an environment which is very isolated actually in this particular space, creating an environment which is actually encouraging youths to congregate. We might need to fix that by putting a CCTV camera on it, I suspect, because I think that there's some validity to what's being said here, that the more of these types of, when you put these resources into places, you need to think about you know, the consequences of doing, of putting that kind of facility that's aimed at older teenagers, really, or older young people, and the consequences of them then congregating in what is a very isolated space. The issue around this park is that it's a very exclusive park for a small number of people. So there's it's a housing estate with I don't know how many houses, but they're all on 5-acre lots, which makes you wonder why you need to put something that's potentially noisy and nuisance generating and, you know, congregating people in an area such as this. So I would like to move an amendment to this motion that we delete item 1.1 from it. I think, as council has said, that it's not really so that the motion stands with the exception of item 1.1 being deleted. What I have learned is that these things get a life of their own, so if you don't address them when they come up, they get a little bit more momentum, and before you know it, you've got something on
the... Sorry to stop you, yeah, but you need a seconder, so we've got... Yeah. You've got the wording right, just to take out 1.1.
So the amendment would be to approve the motion, or to delete item 1.1. Yeah, the same motion with item 1.1 deleted.
Do I have a seconder? No, so that's...
Well, I tried. That's okay. Thanks, Madam Mayor. I'll continue. But so I suppose my view is that this is another step in the process. It gains momentum. This has all come up because of a previous step in the process where it was thought it was all a long way away and it wouldn't happen, and therefore it was sort of left in the master plan. And then I would also say 14 people have supported this. I don't believe, as far as I know, I don't think it was actually promoted by anyone in the community. But my understanding is it was put to the community, would you like it? And people who weren't directly affected by it said, oh yeah, that'd be good. Cost nearly $20,000 for a basketball ring and a half a concrete pad, which seems like a lot of money that we could actually spend in other sites. But However, that's my view, unless it's on the record that the community or some people in the community are concerned about. I think we should get our public health people to look at the issue of noise nuisance in relation to this as well. Thanks, Madam.
Thank you, Councillor Wellington. Did anyone else like to speak on this? No, Councillor Smith, did you want to close?
Look, as I said at the outset, we're looking at future prioritisation and budget process, and I probably would have supported a motion from Councillor Wellington if you'd said further investigation or review, but I didn't want to necessarily delete
it. I'm happy to move an amendment,
and I think at this stage that we'll actually have it in there, and I'm sure that before any it goes into any project prioritisation and budget process, we will actually have another discussion on that matter. But it might have been 5-acre blocks, but my understanding is that the blocks themselves are being reduced, and really I sort of kind of like to think that congregation of people having something to do is actually good for our community and not necessarily bad.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? Thank you. Now moving on to 8.1, Advisory Committee Minutes. Councillors, do I have a mover for those? Thank you, Councillor Smith and Councillor McKittrick. Councillor Smith?
Well, I'd just like to thank all the committees that form part there, the audit and risk, the hearings of submissions, which actually involves councillors, and, of course, our wonderful positive ageing advisory committee who've done a fabulous job presenting the reform plan tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor McKittrick?
No, anyone else?
No. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Moving on to 8.2, the 86 committee minutes. Is to receive and note the minutes of these committees. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Goldsworthy, and thank you, Councillor Bell. Councillor Goldsworthy?
No, Madam Mayor, it's just procedural, and just to acknowledge all the volunteers on those committees.
Councillor Bell?
Just like to acknowledge the amazing amount of work that the volunteers do for us.
Anyone else like to speak on this? I now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Moving on to 8.3, the assemblies of councillors. The purpose of this report is to receive and note the assembly of council records received since the previous council meeting. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Duke. A seconder? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Duke? No. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? The motion is carried. We are now, we'll be moving into a confidential items for consideration tonight, and I would like to thank the gallery and the press for being here, and see you soon, but so we can move into a closed session. But councillors, can I have a mover and second to move into a closed session? Thank you, Councillor McKittrick and Bell. All those in favour? The motion is carried. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.